You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
JSE has closed its doors for another day, and as it's Thursday, we have our tame commentator, Greg Davies, the head of wealth at Kratos Capital, joined, of course, by David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in the salubrious surroundings of Melrose Arch. I know you've probably done this to death throughout the day and speaking to clients, as you, both of you have dozens and dozens of clients. You've been talking about Aspen, but Aspen, quite a nice move. The last time I saw it on my delayed screen, 12% higher, David. It was too high in the 400s, it was too low in the 60s. Where does it find its feet?
I'm trying to work that out. It's up about 11% now at the close, which is still a pretty good move. Lindsay, if you track it from a month ago, or just less than a, less than a month ago, on the 15th of August, I think, roundabout, they hit 65. So they've come all the way back to about 95 now, which is about a 40% turnaround. To be honest, going through the results, I think the response we're seeing now is obviously that they've reduced debt.
Yes.
If you look through the trading numbers, there's not a lot to be enthusiastic about. There are a lot of moving parts there that one has to go through. And I was a bit distracted today and couldn't really go through the full numbers that came out yesterday. But, you know, talking to analysts and that, there's certain elements there in terms of how they position themselves. But I still think that the overall results, okay, you know, but not phenomenal. So I'm a little surprised at the reaction, you know, at this stronger reaction. But it's virtually made up what it lost over that August period and over the scare period. So
yeah.
Good luck. I wasn't at Stephen Sard's presentation, and I think we need to pick up what he said there. That might have also given the market a bit of a lift.
Greg, was it the presentation of Mr. Sard that boosted the share price? How did it react today? I mean, from the opening?
Yes, from the opening, quite strong. Look, I think they went about it in a very, very sensible way. You know, I think they looked at the previous times results released and sent shocks through the market. There wasn't time to answer questions. This time they waited until just 10 past 5 last night, put out the numbers, said, everyone read that and come, you do your homework and come and see us tomorrow morning, and we'll have a presentation for you and some questions. And so the way that they fed these numbers into the market were much more, you know, organized.
Yes.
And gave a good account of themselves. And I think what you're saying is quite right. When it was in the 60s, the market was almost pricing it as if this debt was too big. And, it's like a fighter in a knockout round, just taking too many blows. And the next blow is going to knock them out. And somehow they've managed to get back on their feet. And cash flow looks a little bit better. It's still now out the woods. And then people have got this fear of missing out. What if Aspen goes back to regains half of its goes back to 200 and we don't hold it? Clients will scream at us. Let's just buy some here. Obviously, some people were short, so all those sort of factors pushing the share price up.
It does smack of short covering, doesn't it? I mean, it really does. I think people went into these results thinking, well, yeah, they're not going to soothe us with calming words, but to get the debt down to 39 billion from whatever it was, 54 billion, it's quite a big chunk. But the other point I made, David, to fund manager a few minutes ago, was they didn't want to sell these businesses, but they had to in order to deleverage a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And we knew it. You know, we knew that they were going to sell. So it wasn't any surprise that we saw the debt levels down. But even at 38, 39 billion, it's still a big ask. They still have to service it and they still have to look after it. And, you know, in any business, Lindsay, you have to generate enough cash, number one, to service your debt, also to maintain your assets and then pay money to shareholders. And the shareholders come at the bottom end. You know, they'll be the last to get any payments, and hence the delay in dividend or the postponing of dividend. And I reckon it could be something that you're going to have to watch in future, whether or not you're going to get the kind of dividends that you want. I think they'll continue to conserve cash. And the other thing which you must also mention is that this is an area of the market which is under severe pressure from governments globally.
Yeah.
You're going to listen to Nancy Pelosi or Mitch McConnell or Donald Trump, you know, going on. It's a major issue in the election, drug prices, and it's going to be very difficult for companies to kind of elevate those things. So I think it's a difficult area to be operating in, healthcare, the whole healthcare industry.
Yeah, and the other thing, I suppose, is, I mean, I think it's very, very brave to cut the dividend because it probably tests some people in the market's patience, but I think it was the correct move, and the market said to them, well done. You took a brave move, cut the dividend, because you don't need to carry on paying dividends. As David was saying, shareholders are last in their queue. The other thing which I saw someone mention on Twitter was Keith McLachlan, the well-known small cap analyst, but he was obviously looking at Aspen.
Has it become a small cap?
He's got onto his radar even. I just looked at the market cap just to make sure. $43 billion. But what he was saying is they told us some time back that their big growth area would be China, and now they're selling those businesses which are China-facing. So there is a concern, but certainly hotly debated stock today on the Twitter sphere.
Okay, let's have a look at the Stock Exchange News Service announcements. And before we get to the NASPERS process story, Anheuser-Busch is re-exploring the IPO of its APAC business on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. Again, that sort of thing worries me a little bit. You put it out that there's going to be a listing. Then you say, no, there's not going to be a listing. Then 2 months later, you flip-flop and you come back to it. But anyway, the share price, David, up 1.5%.
Yeah, well, I think the timing was bad. It was the time of the Hong Kong riots and so on. And I also think they never got any decent response they never got a response for the listing.
Yes, you probably find there wasn't. It wasn't.
Sorry, I thought that was you talking in the background.
Ronnie's not quiet. I'll hide in the corner.
So all I'm saying is that I agree with Lindsay. I think that also. I think what disturbs me is that obviously this is not what they planned originally when they put this whole group together. There was no idea that they were going to have to sell off, and this is again another Aspen type situation where they just have to start selling off assets in order to bring down their debt.
It always seems to work for resource companies. You know, Anglo American was selling, and you read a headline and says, "Oh, Anglo's has got big debt and they're going to sell." And you would think, well, how can this work? But resource companies managed to get themselves out of debt holes. Perhaps breweries can do it as well.
They sell good assets, though, and that's all they can sell.
Yeah, Lindsay would know. He's one of the best customers.
Actually, surprised me. I did have a couple of Stellas, but Stellas Stellas not Anheuser-Busch, is it? Is it AB InBev? Yes, it is. Stella Artois, yeah, Belgian
beer.
Yes,
it is,
Yes, it is, of course.
Yeah, it is. Sure, it's one of their premium brands.
I had a couple. I've been drinking Stella for years. Actually, when I was in the south of France, when I was a 19-year-old, that was when I first introduced to Stella, and that was quite a while ago. Greg, you're going to have to do this one. Bola Metcalf. They came out with results this morning.
Hospital pass here. I haven't looked at it. I can give you the share price movement today.
Unchanged.
It hasn't traded a lot of. Yeah, unchanged. Closed at R7.40. It did trade a bit higher earlier in the day to around 760. But the problem is here, 25,000 rands worth of shares, and it's something Lindsay and I speak often about on the pod. These smaller caps, it's got a market cap of 607 million. Just there's no analysts even looking at them. This company, I think, has been listed on the stock exchange probably since the day David signed up. But
it was there when I was there,
It paid a dividend of 25 cents as opposed to last year's 21.54 cents. So it's increased its dividend by what is that? I can't do the maths, David. You're an accountant. Probably about 18%.
I can barely spell the shares.
It's 16%. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
But Lindsay, it's something. I think it's a Pitfall Yun type stock. You know, you probably look at it. One of the value plays. You know, look for something
to make
out
of them. You can have all the
stock you want. Bola Metcalf. I'm not even sure what they do.
Some sort of packaging. Yeah.
Are they okay?
Let me grab my handbook. Hold on.
Okay, I'll give you the benefit.
Talking about small cap stocks, I was at the offices of Investec Asset Management at the foreshore in Cape Town yesterday, and I spoke to a gentleman by the name of John Bickard. And Graham, what's your name? Greg, you're a big fan of his. Did you listen to the interview? Because he's gone big into Caxton. Did you hear that?
Caxton, yeah.
Caxton.
Yeah, he does have a habit of just finding these sort of unloved stocks, dusting them off and having a look at them. And say, look, some of these things are hit and miss, but I wish him all the best of luck with it.
Yes, indeed. What about this one? African Rainbow Capital Investments Limited, their final results for the year ended 30th of June. What do you know about this one, David? It's obviously...
Which one was that one, sorry?
African Rainbow Capital. Obviously a spin-off from African Rainbow Minerals.
That comes out of African Rainbow Minerals. Yeah, this is all the various Johans that are trying to put together a financial service industry. And I don't mean to be disparaging, but the last thing I think we need, I always say the last thing we need is more financial companies in the world, financial services business, insurance businesses, and so on. So I don't really have a good feel for them. And I think at this stage, it's still pretty small. And really, there's nothing in there. This is what worries me. Mm. Yes, it was started as a private equity business, but there's nothing in there that you can really get your teeth into and say, listen, this is modern tech, or this is high tech, or this is something that's going to change the way that the world operates. You know, to me, it's just another an accumulation of businesses. Yeah, I know it's got Rain. What have they got?
Yeah, the Time Bank.
And Rain. I think they've got both of them. People talk very highly of them, but you're in an economy which is barely turning over. So, look, for the future, it might be where future technology is, but at this point, I haven't had any appetite to go into them in any further way, in big way.
But have a look at the portfolio value, $9.359 billion, which is it's a decent amount of money. Cash in the ARC fund at year end, $725 million. Time Bank and Rain are meeting their milestones, it says. And this is a company which it describes itself as a public company, which is incorporated in the Republic of Mauritius and holds a Category 1 global business license under the Mauritian Financial Services Act and is regulated by the Mauritian Financial Services Commission. But I do think we're starting to come a little bit overbanked in South Africa, don't you, Greg? David?
Yes, I think so. But I think what they're attempting here is, if you look at BEE companies, the one place where they really haven't got a foothold and sort of built their business from scratch is in the sort of financial services space. So this, I think, is another attempt at doing that. But as David was saying, it's the worst timing, really. We overbanked. No one's even looking at these things. I mean, do you need this Time Bank? It just seems like more trouble than it's worth.
British American Tobacco says it's going to simplify BAT to drive new category growth. I don't know what that means. So less cigarettes and more vaping. Although the vaping story is an interesting one, because vaping, there's been a body of medical evidence coming out in the last 2 weeks to say that it causes heart problems. So if you've got the cigarettes causing lung cancer and all sorts of other forms of cancer, and you've got the vaping causing heart problems, where does British American Tobacco go?
Well, I think there's been a lot of pressure.
But it was interesting, because last night there was some headlines from New York Times saying the Trump administration is considering, putting some sort of medical block on the vaping. And I think it's the vaping side which is competing against British American Tobacco, because you saw BTI had a solid rally this morning into the 560 Rand area. It did pull back a little bit, but still was up 0.75% for the day.
Yeah, you know what's happening, Greg, is people are putting their own mixtures in.
Yes.
And I think where the dangers are, so they're not taking official or mixtures that are sold over the counter. They're mixing something in the backyard and putting it in there that's causing the problems. And the other big problem is that kids are vaping. Yeah. And we're talking about 12, 13-year-old, 14-year-old college or school kids that are vaping at school. And that's becoming a problem, because you don't know what the consequences of vaping is. Is it not dangerous? Is it dangerous? Does it lead to them, doing other things? So I think this is where the worry, and I think if regulations are going to come in, they're going to kind of regulate products or products that can only be sold to 18-year-olds and so on. So I think that's where
The FDA in the US. I actually was having a long discussion with a client today who's been holding British American Tobacco for a long time, and it's obviously had this rally today. We both kind of just said, oh, we just can't take another headline where the share price gets knocked back below. We're thinking of throwing in the towel and putting it all into NASPAS and hoping for this.
Time for you to come clean, Greg. You're a vapor, right?
Yes. Exactly what David is saying. It's something not like smoking cigarettes. You can do it very much sort of that people wouldn't notice. You know, if you're a school kid, it's not like having the cigarettes and the lighter.
You don't notice. You just walk around like you've got this whole vapor thing around you. You can't even see the person who's vaping. If you look at a motor car, it's all frosty inside from the stuff that's floating out.
Yeah, I do it discreetly. I've got one that's about the size of a pen. I mean, no one's looking here at the trading room. I'll just quickly have a quick drag just to get me through the day.
Where does the smoke go there?
Is it briefly smoking? Everybody says, "What's that?" And I said, "No, I'm just lighting some incense." You know.
Greg, let's move on from vaping to Silverbridge Holdings Limited. Preliminary audited results for the year ended. Come on, it's down 33 1/3%. What is Silverbridge? Greg?
No, you've got me. I don't even know the code, David.
Okay, it's SVP.
I have no idea. All I know, it's an IT company. That's all.
SVP, Greg. SVB, sorry. Silverbridge.
Okay. All right. I can give you the oh, they've got a clattering down. Down 33%. Yeah. And it was a reasonable volume compared to the others that we've been looking at. 100,000 shares traded. I'm not sure why they aggressively knocked it down, but it was bid at 60 cents, offered at 85. I haven't obviously looked through the numbers.
Okay, this is one that you probably both had a huge sigh of relief when you saw this announcement, which came out at 13:47 today on the Stock Exchange News Service. In Bali Beauty Limited, had its suspension on the JSE lifted. You must be thrilled.
I'm so relieved. What is it?
I don't know. It's a cosmetic firm, obviously. I mean, it's been trading at 2 cents, or that was the last prevailing price.
Yeah. So, no, the JSE need to have, like, sort of a spring cleaning at the beginning of spring every year to clean out all of these things. Anything which trades less than 100,000 rand with the shares, make its own little nursery stock exchange, or they can go to the ATX or something.
Yeah. Alternative, they need to start promoting these
companies.
Remember,
we used to have those, those penny stocks down the left-hand side of the stock exchange.
Gentlemen, let's go from Mbali Beauty, the ridiculous, to the sublime of Naspers. And I'll start with you, David, because I've been speaking to Greg about this one. How's it panning out? I mean, the first couple of days of trading, do you think those days have set the tone for the future, or is there going to be one of those sharp reversals as we've seen with other splits?
It's still very interesting that it's trading as heavily as it is. You know, of the 24 odd billion that we saw today, this was 5.5, still 22%. Yesterday we saw equal volumes in this and process, but today process 7.5%. So again, I think it's going to take a few weeks before it actually settles down. I'm not sure what's behind the heavy volumes in Naspers, whether it's still traders there on the derivative side, still playing the arbitrage between that and the underlying business, between the derivative and the underlying shares. I don't know whether it's still related to that. It still has a weighting, but I think it's going to take time before we're able to work out what the consequence of this deal is. But for the meantime, still a lot of interest in the share. We only get allocated our shares on Monday, I think.
Yes.
You know, we'll know they'll start appearing
in clients' accounts. The BDA system of the JSEs. But the CFD guys, the futures trading, those were in the accounts today.
Yeah.
Someone else pointed, I was just walking out the office and I talked to one of the traders. He said there is a possibility that this process, because obviously Tencent, so obviously Hong Kong and JSE overlap by possibly an hour and a half. I think they close at 11. There could be a sort of an arbing opportunity between the two. I don't think it's begun yet, but certainly if algos could probably do that, and perhaps that'll boost the volume in the counter process.
I'm just looking. I mean, it has been tracking process in Amsterdam. There's been, you know, there's a close relationship here. I haven't picked up volumes. I haven't been able to pick up volumes in process in Amsterdam, but obviously it's tracking what's happening here. It's down about 2.9%. I see. My screens might be a little delayed in Amsterdam.
No,
it was only down 1.5 or something.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Certainly down 2.8. Yeah.
What are your traders doing, Greg? There's a whole bank of traders there. What is their instinct with this thing?
It's the problem with especially trading Naspers is you're trading against the algos, the machines that are putting on the order. You've got like a set of sort of three or four guys that are specialists that know how the algos work and just play against them all day. But they're not actually taking a view on the stock, just trading the direction on the day.
What's interesting, Lindsay, is that yesterday we had a gap on Naspers of about 30% plus. You know, it depends on where your valuations are. But today they've narrowed down to about 3.5%. And so that's come down quite a lot from yesterday. Nasdaq's going up for whatever reason today. I can't understand, or we won't understand the movement yet. It was totally out of line.
About 130 Rand up, the two together from Tuesday afternoon's close, if my calculations are right. I'm sure they are.
Greg, do you know who I bumped into today at Amsterdam's Schiphol Airport? Mark Everdy, do you remember Mark Everdy? Well, you know him because he's one of your chat groups. Yeah, he was there, and I was talking to him about media, and he says, "Yeah, I like your podcasts. I listen to them, but I don't take any notice of them," which I thought was, you know, giving with one hand and taking away with the other. He doesn't watch CNBC. He just says, "No, it's just gut instinct. I look at the algos, and that's the way it's going. Not much fundamental analysis from these traders. They're a different breed."
Yes, and sometimes the ones which don't even open a newspaper are the ones which make the most money. So we've got a reading area where they have all the financial mails and all the newspapers, and it's sort of like almost trying to trap them. When they're going to make coffee, they might read something, but mostly they don't read.
No, you're quite right, because it clouds your vision. If you start looking at Trump's tweets all the time, I mean, the short term...
Well, there's been plenty. You know what I love about Trump and about the tweets is that you have to give it to him last night calling the Fed boneheads. In the modern generation, teachers cannot call their kids idiots or fools or stupid, you know, which we used to be regularly called at school. You can't do that anymore. You can't do any of that now. Even you can't even talk to your children. You can't even use those kind of words when you talk to your children or grandchildren. And yet he calls the Fed, bonehead. So, you know, you got to hand it to him. I mean, he breaks all kinds of conventions and really sets a store of, you know, sets value system, which I think really the schools there should uphold. I like to go back to calling children boneheads.
Yeah, the world's got a little bit too soft. I mean, people just toughen up. There's nothing wrong with bonehead. I think he called someone a bedbug the other day, one of the journalists, and the journalist closed his Twitter account straight afterwards.
Were you punished at school, you two? I mean, with a cane or a ruler or something? Did you have your hand smacked with a ruler? Did you have your bottom spanked with a cane? Were you caned at school, either of you?
Yeah, of course.
David will know. David knew my father very well. He was a broker. And I met my father's headmaster. My father went to Escort High School. His name was R.O. Pierce. He wrote a couple of books. But he said to me, "I caned your father more than any other child that came through the school." And David will attest, it made no difference.
Nah, please. We survived. We've got no scars. In fact, it was a badge of honor.
Yes,
you know what happened? Yeah. And teachers would... You'd often be called out. It wasn't you talking to someone else. And they say, "Go to the office." Say, "It wasn't me. It wasn't me." "Nah, go to the office." You go to the headmaster's office. "Why are you here?" "So-and-so sent me." "Okay, bend over." You know, and then a break, you go to the toilet and take down your pants and see the blue stripe there and that, you know. And I mean, everybody would gather around.
It was a thing to be proud of. Yeah, if you got six, you were a player.
But I mean, I don't think anybody, you know, you flinched a bit when you got whipped, but I don't think anybody took it seriously. And I don't think it scarred us and psychologically damaged us, you know, hell. I was in the Air Force. So I was called every name you could think of, you know. I came out okay, you know, I'm fine.
Yeah, look at you now. You're a better man for it. Most of you shares on sharenet.co.za today. Naspers, Aspen, Steinhoff, and Process. We've spoken about all of those except for Steinhoff. They got a fine today, I saw, on the Stock Exchange News Service.
Pretty funny, because, I mean, the initial number was over $1 billion. And I think the people in Pretoria thought, "These guys look, you know, so poor. Let's just give them the 50 million. It's nothing for them."
Top five major moves. They should have jumped
on the story months ago. Sorry,
Greg, give us the top five to the upside, please, today.
Yeah, well, we spoke about Aspen. That's up 10%. Impala Platts up 6%, back to 90 Rand. That's back to its recent high. We touched just after results. Palladium and the platinum price have been very strong. I'm sure Mr. Bickard was pointing that out. Yes, Anglo Platts as well, up 5%. Northam, another one in that stable, up 5%. The Mighty Sibanye, up 5% as well, just above 18 Rand. I mean, all of these are certainly Sibanye is well off its recent highs, but had a decent day today.
Very good on the downside. Sorry, go on, David.
Yeah, just Lindsay, on the, you know, the platinum's a bit odd because platinum hasn't really run away. I mean, it's in the 530 area, 540 area. The rand is down. So it's interesting to see why we had that sudden surge.
Maybe it's the palladium, I think. Yeah. The palladium's over 1,600, Maybe it's
so, Okay. But for whatever reason it is,
On the downside, we have the following shares. Hammerson down 4.1%, Process down 2.9%, Into Prop down 1 2/3, Telcom down 1.5%, Glencore down 1.5%. Any stories there or just routine stuff?
That's weird today, because at Into, I don't know if you saw it this morning, David, it was the first hour of trade was super strong. Put in a high at 8.03, was up about 7 or 8%. And everybody said to the moon and back, and it finished the date R7.77.
It's interesting because you were talking to John Bickhard.
Yeah.
Someone mentioned to me yesterday, I think it was even Julieta, that Bickhard was buying into. And I thought maybe if he's going to go into that, I'd rather go into Capco. You know, I'm not sure about into, but nevertheless, with Growthpoint buying Capital and Regional, maybe. You know, maybe people are looking or investors are looking for some of those bombed out, UK stocks. I would like to see them a little bombed out further. I'm not ready to make that kind of bet yet.
Not yet, no. we didn't mention the Spur Corporation. They came out with their numbers today as well. And I was at Cape Town International Airport last night, and I'd been speaking to Wayne McCurry. And you know, Wayne's quite – he's not a foodie because that's a stupid word.
He is.
But he likes his food. That's the thing about him. He really likes – and he likes meat as well. He's always – whenever I speak to him about Woolworths, he bemoans the fact that the salt and pepper squid has been taken off the menu at Woolworths. It's almost as though – it's like him crashing his one of his Jaguars. I mean, it's like he's lost a friend. But he said the best burger in South Africa is the Spur burger. So I went to the Spur upstairs watching the aeroplanes while I'm waiting for my flight, and I had a burger. Goodness me, it was delicious. Greg, we've got fond memories of the Spur, haven't we? His fathers.
Yeah, when dads turn to look after the kids, it's down to the Spur, put the rugby on, pass me a beer, send the kids to the play area. It's wonderful.
Yeah. It's a very good place. The spot prices.
I think my kids are a little too old for that. You know?
Yeah, mine in their 20s now.
Mine in my 40s. Yeah.
Okay, dollar rand is 14.59, British pound against the rand is 17.99, and the euro rand is 16.11. Euro dollar 110.40, which is a slightly stronger euro by around about 0.3%. Looking at the gold price, the all-important precious metals, gold has regained its composure. It's now 15.08, which is up 11. The platinum price is up 13.5 to 9.59. Palladium, Greg?
Yeah, I'm up $44. It's at 16.20. If I can just jump back
to
the gold
price.
That's
a new high, isn't it? A new year high.
Yes, I think it's certainly very, very close to that. But at about 2:15, there was the ECB rate decision, and people were expecting it to be unchanged. And then Mr. Draghi decided to cut, and the gold price rocketed up to around 15.20. And with all high fives around the gold traders here. And fast forward to now, it's back at 15.06. So we may have had just too much excitement. It was a very short bull market. Sorry, David.
I just think it's losing momentum, that's all. I just don't feel the same kind of push. It's not pulling like it is. There are a couple of stories as well, and I think this is where the danger is. In the last couple of – you know, the S&P is close to all-time highs. Yes. We're at 1513 at the moment. Sorry, 30013. Which is 3025 was the all-time high. So we're 12 points away, which is less than 0.5% away from the all. And, you know, if the trade deal talks, it's on and off, and it's on and off. Advisors saying, you know, they're talking about a deal. CNBC comes out and says, no, it's not so, and so on. But nevertheless, I think we're very close to that. If something does happen there and we start to get another resurgence in equities and that, I would imagine that some of the safe havens are going to come under pressure. We're already seeing pressure on rates as well. You know, long rates are going up as the 10-year is up at about 170. I don't know what happened today. Yesterday it was 173. That's from 146 last week. 1.46%. Sorry for talking like that, but so I wonder if it's if we're not going to see a bit of downward pressure, you know, on some of those safe havens for the meantime.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sanjeev's always pointed out that gold had you know, touched that 1550 level. Mm. Basically, from there, it's just not had the same gusto behind it, really.
David, what's your shock or story of the day, please?
I think that was it. You know, the S&P at 3012, I think. The fact that we're heading towards an all-time high, whether we make it today or not, any talk of a trade deal. And my view is that Trump, you know, with the firing of Bolton, is moving towards much more conciliatory tone with Iran. You know, he wants to entertain the Taliban. And I'm sure that down the line, he wants to make concessions to the, to the Chinese. It's going to be a dragged out story that he'll drag it to next year. But I'm sure he wants the market to keep this upward momentum. So I'm okay with the markets, and I think this is something we didn't expect a week or two ago.
Greg, what have you dug up today? You're the digger. What have you dug up?
Yeah. I mean, it probably would have gone unnoticed, but Mr. Price, and I mean, someone actually tweeted me and said I'd spoken about it on the pod last night, but Mr. Price suddenly did a 3.5% fall yesterday afternoon. There was no sense announcement. There was nothing. And then, of course, this morning that was forgotten about, and the share got up to 173. Then at 22 to 3, I mean, you often read sense announcements, and you read what's there, but you read more what's not there, and some things brewing there with Mr. Price. I mean, two people have been fired, from my understanding or from reading this, for some sort of non-compliance, but I'm sure the story's got more meat on the bones to come.
Okay, this is what I've got, which is a sad state of affairs, I have to say, because releasing this is terrible. I can't believe what I'm reading here. Releasing the 2018-2019 crime stats in Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Police on Thursday, the minister began by saying they were not very rosy. I mean, come on now. They, in 2019, up to 31st of March, over the last year, March to March, that is, increases in all contact crimes, including murder, sexual offences, attempted murder, assault with intent to cause grievous bodily harm, common assault, common robbery, and robbery with aggravating circumstances. Every single category went up.
Yeah, yeah.
Sexual offences increased by 4.6%. Robbery with aggravating circumstances increased the least, but still up 1.2%. And this is what they say. Over the last year, and Greg, just give me a ballpark figure, how many people were murdered in the last year up to March the 31st in South Africa? How many people were murdered?
David, it must be
it's
more than
every
two
half
a day
an hour,
or so,
I think. Yeah. No, it's one every half an hour or so.
Oh, really? Hey?
Yeah.
But that's the shock of the day, because we're not even that shocked,
Is it one every half? I think it's
21,002 people. 21,002 people were murdered across the country.
It's like a war, yeah.
The most common cause of murder, and this is what really staggers me, was misunderstandings / arguments, followed by domestic violence and gang-related killings. Incidents of murder decreased between 2009 and 2012 to 15,500. Now we're back up at 21,000. This is unbelievable.
If it was, I mean, even when we were up on the border, you know, fighting a war, it would be highly unusual, you know, for in a one sort of 6 month period for four people to be killed, really. I mean, obviously on our side, much more on their side, yeah. But that's 57 people a day in misunderstandings. Yeah. Wow.
That's right. Almost one every half hour. Yeah.
Man. 41,583 rapes. Sexual offences, 52,420, and rape is obviously a subsection of the sexual offences. I mean, and these are the ones that have been recorded, because a lot of rapes go unreported as well, so it could be 10,000 higher. It's staggering. What are we going to do about this?
Well, that's where you start. You know, until you sort that out, you're never going to get a country in which anybody wants to invest. And that's my big complaint. I say you don't need NHIs, you don't need NRPs and all these different policies.
Fix
the basics. Yeah. You know, that's it. And it's, you know, Lindsay, when you see, I think that South Africans have actually, we don't know what normal is. We've lived here for so long, and we've lived under these circumstances that we don't know what normal life is. We don't know what it's like to be in Rotterdam and to be able to walk in the streets or just go down the road for a pub, you know, without being accosted. We don't know. And that's why we kind of accept it in that. But until we get to normality here, You know, you drive on our roads, we're so used to it, we don't even get angry when someone drives on the other side of the road or goes through a robot. And the cops don't care either. So I think, you know, if you ever wanted to get things on the right road, that's where you start, you know. And that commitment can only come from the people in charge. And they've got to have the right appetite to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think they've got it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's just so it was, I walked from the foreshore to Greenpoint, and I deliberately did it, and I think I've told you this before. It was about three nights ago. It was 8 o'clock in the evening. The sun had just set, and I thought, well, you know what, I'm just going to see what happens. I was accosted three times in a 10-minute walk from foreshore to a pub called Vasco da Gama's in Greenpoint. And when I say accosted, I wasn't assaulted or anything, but people came up to me and hassled me. And I thought, no, this is...
And I mean, you're 6'7" and a giant of a man. What chance from David and I?
Greg, let's close with the closing JSE indices, please.
Yeah, it's actually a good day. We sort of talked about so many different topics, but another very strong day. The banks up 2.5%, financials up 1.75%, industrials up 1.75%, retailers the same, gold index up 1.75%, platinums were on fire today, up 5.7%, resources up 0.75%. That left the all share nearly 1%, 0.96% better, 538 points up, 56,782, and great volume again, 24.8. You know, thanks to the must-pass twins.
Gentlemen, thanks very much for your time this evening. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities in Melrose Arch in Johannesburg. Greg Davies is the head of wealth at Kratos Capital in Illovo. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox. strictlybusinesspodcast.com, made possible by Prudential Investment Managers.